Okay, good evening, everyone. Well done for making it out here in the snow. So we move on. To recap what we discussed last week, if you recall, we did two main melachot last week, we did two main activities last week. Number one, we talked about gozez, which means to cut, to shear. And we talked about different forms of cutting, and nails, and hair, and combing one's hair, etc. That was all discussed last week. And we also talked about colouring, tzoveh, if you recall. And we explained the idea that there's no colouring with food and drink, and also makeup on Shabbat, and suntans on Shabbat, whether you can have whether you can sit in the sun in order to tan yourself, and also using the sanitizers in toilets which have a color to them, all of that. That's what we discussed last week. So now we move on to hopefully tonight three main melachot we're going to be doing. Is firstly is melaben, cleaning. Secondly will be kosher, knotting and unknotting. And thirdly will be tzad, trapping. So let's start with melaben. So what does melaben mean? Melaben means to clean. So in the Mishkan, we said already that one of the roofs of the Mishkan used wool. Now, shearing the wool, that's what we discussed last week. Cutting off the wool, that's where the shearing comes from. But before you can use that wool, before you can spin it and create a fabric with it, you first have to clean the material. And so the essence of melaben is an act of cleaning. That's what melaben means, cleaning. Now, cleaning means when you are cleaning the actual fabric itself. So you have some wool, you have a suit, you have a dress, and something has actually become absorbed within the material, and you clean it. That's what melaben means. Anything above the surface area, that's not considered cleaning. That's just an act of removing. So the person's got feathers all over his clothes. Cannot go out in public with clothes like this. There's no issue of cleaning, of taking these feathers off, because that's not called cleaning. Cleaning means removing something from the fabric of the material. And anything above the material, sitting on the material, that's not considered cleaning, and that would be permissible to be done on Shabbat. Therefore, removing anything like feathers, so on and so forth, that would be considered permissible, and there's no problem with that. Now, there are three main aspects of cleaning, and each one of them is a separate biblical prohibition to be done on Shabbat. Each one of these three. And they are, number one, soaking, number two, scrubbing, and number three, squeezing. Each one of these three is a separate activity of melaben, and is separately forbidden to do on Shabbat. What does that mean? That means like this. That means if you have a dirty shirt, whatever it may be, and you go and soak it in water. You don't scrub it, you just soak it there. The act of soaking actually begins the cleaning process. It allows the dirt to start to become released, and therefore that in itself is a forbidden activity by the Torah. After that, then you scrub normally. We have washing machines today, but that's what we did in the olden days. You know, it was soak it in water, then scrub it, and then squeeze it out. So, the second stage is the scrubbing, because of course scrubbing, that's a very important activity that allows you to dislodge the dirt, which is penetrating the material. And then finally, even if that all happened before Shabbat, so let's say you soaked it, and you scrubbed it before Shabbat, but you didn't have a chance to squeeze it out. Squeezing out is part of kibbutz, is part of laundering, and the act of squeezing out is equally forbidden to be done on Shabbat. So what that means in practice, today we don't have washing machines, we don't really have this, so it's common, but what this can mean is, if you have, let's say in the sink, you have a dirty shirt lying around there, to switch on the tap would be a problem. You wouldn't be allowed to do that, because that's, you're soaking the garments, that's forbidden to be done on Shabbat. If a person has a stain on his clothes, and let's say, actually putting water on it, even if you're not going to scrub it, that's not allowed. If water fell on it accidentally, you now want to scrub it, that's also not allowed. If water fell on it, you want to squeeze it out, all these are all forbidden to be done. So it's not just the act of, you know, putting something in the washing machine on Shabbat. Any of these forms, either of these three forms are forbidden by the Torah on Shabbat. Either soaking it in water, or scrubbing it, thirdly, squeezing it out. And even if two of the three have occurred by themselves or occurred from before Shabbat, nonetheless, it's still forbidden to be done the third one. So as I said, you know, if water's fallen on your head to stay, and water it's gone out in the rain, then go and scrub it and remove the dirt, that would be prohibited. But we'll talk later about how a person can get rid of a stain from his clothes on Shabbat, if that's possible. That's important to remember always the three different parts of Melaben. Each one is equally forbidden. Always remember to have those three stages clear in your head. Now, the question is, what happens with a clean garment? So a garment which has already been laundered and it's already clean, is there a problem to soak it further? So why would you want to do this? Very simple. Let's say you have a towel which has been laundered and it's nice and fresh and clean, and you have a headache and you want to put a wet towel on your head. So you want to take the towel, you want to cool down a bit, you take the towel, you want to soak it in water and then put it on your head. Would that be allowed? So some Rishonim argue that soaking it in water, even if it's a clean garment, the act of soaking is forbidden. Even if it's clean, because every time you soak it in water, it adds cleanliness. And if you think about it historically, that makes a lot of sense. Today with washing machines, it's more debatable how true that is. But in the olden days, you think about it, you've washed your garments, you've put it in water, you've soaked it, and now it's clean. But putting it in water again, that adds a bit more cleanliness. And therefore, the final halakha, which we follow, is that it's not a sur. If the garment is clean, one is allowed to re-soak it in water on Shabbat. And therefore, if, as I said, the example, you have a headache, you want to put a towel on your cold towel, a wet towel on your head, you may, provided it's a clean one, you may soak it and put that on your head in order to cool down. Similarly, if you have spillage, water spilled on your table, you may take a clean towel and wipe up that water, even though you are, in a sense, causing it to be soaked. Think about it, it's in a big spillage. You are cleaning it up and you're soaking this towel, in a sense. That is permitted because the towel's already clean. There's another reason why it's permitted, but without going into that. This is
dirty towel, wouldn't be?
The dirty towel, wouldn't be? No. You wouldn't, that's a good point. You wouldn't be able to use a dirty towel to clean up something. Yeah, what does dirty mean? Dirty means it's soiled, right? As opposed to just you've used it to wash your hands. So that's fine. Disposed tissue is fine. Because the only material we're talking about it. Disposed tissue would be fine. But just staying on the towels, even when one is soaking up the water, spillage, etc., one should be careful that it doesn't soak it to the extent that when you touch it, it's going to be so wet that it's going to inevitably, psik ratio will squeeze water out. Yeah, that's not to the extent. You can soak it, you can make it wet, not to the extent it's totally soaked, lift it up and by touching it, water comes out. That would be a problem, of course. And secondly, in such cases, we have a concern when something becomes soaked, we have a concern that it becomes mukhtar, so you won't come to squeeze it out, because there's a strong concern that because it's soaked, you will come to squeeze it out further. And therefore, the correct way, when you have a spillage, water has spilled on the table, take a clean towel, not a dirty one, take a clean towel and you wipe it all up. But if it's been all over the table and using one small towel, that would be a problem. Use a different towel. You don't want to make it totally soaked. Using something like paper towels, that's fine. Those may even be completely soaked because there is no concern you'll come to squeeze them out afterwards, because once they're soaked, just chuck them out, of course. So that would be fine. When you pick them up and water comes out, that's the surface area water. Right? If you're picking it up and whilst you're doing that, you're squeezing it, that would be a problem. If you're just picking it up and throwing it straight in the bin, now squeezing it, That wouldn't be a problem. So that's the correct way of doing it. Following on from what we talked about last week, if you remember, we talked about, let's see who remembers, if a person has his fingers bleeding, we said. Did we talk about this last week? If his fingers bleeding? Yeah? Okay. So what do you do if your finger's bleeding? Got red blood. Can you take a white towel and clean your finger? What did we say? No, it's not because of fish. It's just a little cut.
Yeah.
So it's good to put it under the tap. Yeah. The first instance, put it on the tap, and then you. Why? Because it's red. The finger's red. But strictly speaking, it's fine. If the tap's not available, one may do so. So therefore, similarly, when you have spillage, you have the juice. You have a juice, red juice, whatever it may be, wine, etc. Then, using the towel, and what you're doing is you are colouring the towel in the inverted commas. So if you have a choice between using a towel and using a handkerchief, something like that, which is washed and reused, or using something like tissues, you definitely use paper tissues. Because that's disposable and there's no so bad, there's no colouring with something so transient like that. Whereas a towel, again, for nothing else, you may use a white towel and clean it up, even though it's getting coloured. If one has a choice between that and a paper towel, and definitely a paper towel is to be preferred. Now, we've said that you can't put water on your clothes, that's a stain, that will be forbidden by the Torah. What happens if you want to remove a stain without using water? So, you want to peel it off. So you have mud. Your mud on your trousers or mud on your jacket, whatever it may be. You want to know if it's now dried up and you want to peel it off. Would that be permissible or not? It's not permissible. Okay, why not? It's grinding. Okay, that's a good point. So, it's not grinding. I know why you're saying it's grinding. And there is one opinion which says that, but it's not grinding. Why is it not grinding from what we've learned in the past?
It's already ground.
Excellent. It's already ground. Remember we said, En tochen achar tochen. The same reason you're allowed to, we learned in the past, you're allowed to crush a biscuit. Why are you allowed to crush a biscuit on Shabbat with your hand? Because the flour has already once gone through the grinding process, already been ground, the flour. And it's now been made into a biscuit, you may crush the biscuit. Bread as well, you may crush bread. Because en tochen achar tochen. Once it's already had techina done to it, maybe done to it again. And therefore, the mud, it was once separate particles. And therefore, scraping it off won't be a problem of tochen. That's a good point. It's not the halakha, we don't follow that. What's wrong with scraping? Oh, as in scraping, that's leveling out, you mean?
Yeah.
You're not really leveling out, you're just wiping it off, scraping it off. You're not leveling the surface. Now, to remove what's on top of your garments, according to everyone, is permissible. So you have mud. Again, mud is a specific example, you have frog tochen, leaving the side. I'm talking from a cleaning perspective, according to everyone, is permissible. Why? Because, like we talked about the feathers at the beginning. That's above the surface. Something which is stuck to you, that's above the surface. So just to take your nail and to wipe off what's on top, that's definitely permissible. The question is with regards to the stain remaining. So you remove the surface area, you've got the stain. That stain itself, that is, some say that's fine because you're not using water. You could rub it, you could scrub, you know, with your nail. Okay, but the final five, one should preferably use a non-Jew to do that. One could ask a non-Jew explicitly to scratch it off. You wouldn't be able to ask a non-Jew to put water on it and to scrub it off, unless there was extremely extenuating circumstances. Because generally speaking, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something forbidden by the Torah. And to pour water on, he said, forbidden by the Torah. And therefore, to ask a non-Jew to pour water on your stain and to rub it off, that would definitely be forbidden. But in this case, where you just scraping off the stain itself, that would be definitely permissible to ask a non-Jew. And if there's no non-Jew available at all, and one needs to look clean, importance, it's going out, public appearance, etc., then there is room to be lenient, even scrape it yourself with your finger. But again, no water involved. The typical melaben is with water. If there's no water, then we've said that may be permissible.
So can you do that with your shoes too then?
What about
this? You had mud on your shoes.
Yes, you'd be able to, yeah, to peel it off. Yeah. If there's no tochen, it's already the mud. We don't consider that you're grinding it. Yeah, but with using water would be a problem again. Yeah. Using water would be a problem.
Now,
that's correct. If it's wet mud, you can't. That's correct. Yes, wet mud you don't have to because of that problem. But if it's dry mud and you're just scraping it off, that's permissible to do on Shabbat. Now, what about sometimes your jacket can, or your hat, or your dress can fall on the floor, and it's a dusty floor, and there's dust all over it. Is there anything to be done? Are you allowed to clean that on Shabbat or not? You have to clean the dust. You have to like take a brush and to bang it, or to bang the garment itself. Or you have to do that. So the halakha for Sfaradim for sure is that one is allowed to do so. Reason being is we consider the dust to be same idea again. Yeah, it's on the surface. It's not absorbed in the material. It's on the material. And therefore one may even use a clothes brush to clear it from over there. Even use a brush in order to bang or to brush the dust off a garment. However, it's definitely preferable to do it with a shinui in an unusual manner, i.e. with your left hand. The reason being is because there is one opinion of Rashi, which the Ashkenazim try to abide by. And again, it's all based on understandings in the Talmud. I'm not going into the details how they come out with these different understandings. But there is this opinion recorded, and because according to the other opinion, it's forbidden by the Torah to clean out dust from a garment, preferably one should try to use a shinui when he's cleaning the dust, try to do it with the left hand or any other form, the unusual manner. But mikar hadin, from this basic letter of the law, one is allowed to clean off dust. The same idea which we said until now is that it's only surface area, it's not actually absorbed in the material. A couple more points and we'll take a question.
Brush your hat and your left hand.
Yeah, definitely mutar. Definitely mutar. Brush your hat. Yeah, for sure. Two final points, and then we'll summarize Melaben. Chachamim forbade, this is ready, we're going on to rabbinic level now. Chachamim forbade a person to spread out his clothes on Shabbat, which are wet. So you've gone out in this weather, come up from shore, come back from dinner, whatever it is, and your clothes are soaked. And you want to spread them out on the banister at home, or on a clothesline, whatever it may be. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbat? So Chacham says you're not allowed to. And the reason, obvious reason being is that the problem is Marit Ayin. Okay? Marit Ayin means the idea that people see things, the onlooker sees things and may think that you have washed it on Shabbat. And therefore, if your clothes are wet, soaking wet, you may not spread them out. And I'm using the word spreading carefully. You may not spread them out on Shabbat, even in a place where people can't see, you're living alone at home. So this is an important principle. Marit ayin is afilu bechadrei chadarim asur. Something which is forbidden for the onlooker is forbidden even in secrecy and in privacy, because there's even a constant marit ayin for yourself. And therefore, even though no one's going to see, nonetheless, to spread out something, let's say on the bathroom line, in a drying cupboard, all these types of things, would it's forbidden to do so, to spread it out. However, having said that, 2 points is that firstly, only spreading out is not permissible. You take your dress, you take your garment, and you spread it out. To hang something up, to clip it on,
That's not called spreading out. And that wasn't part of the rabbinic enactment. You may argue it's also the God the same. Yeah, that's true. But
even if you clip it on, you want me take a peg, even though a peg is a muktzah, it's a chish machtoli isur.
Normally you use it to spread out. Unless it's tzorich makom asher gufo, for its own purpose, you're allowed to use that type of muktzah. And therefore, one may take his, whatever it is, garment, and just clip it on. To spread it over the line and then clip it on, that would be forbidden. That's called the spreading out. That's forbidden even in your house, not just outside. Definitely outside, it's forbidden in your garden, on the line, washing line for sure is forbidden. But if you're just clipping it on, and it just drapes down, it falls down, it's not spread out, that is fine to do on Shabbat. And the other point is to hang it up in a place, even in a place where it's normal for these things to hang, a coat, for example, which is wet, to hang it up in a place where you hang up coats, that's also fine, no problem, that's just a normal way of doing things. So when you're talking, spreading it out, and it's not the usual place of putting things, a banister, bathroom line, these types of things, then you have this issue of hanging up so that people don't think that you've washed it on Shabbat. To summarize what we've talked about melaben, we'll take questions. What we've said is that melaben means to clean, and it means to clean the actual fabric, the actual material. We said there are three parts to melaben. Number one is the actual act of putting it in water. Second act is to scrub. And the third is to then squeeze it out. And we said that putting it, soaking in a clean garment in water is permissible, and therefore a person can soak a towel to put on his head. You can also clean up the table with that. If you've got covered drinks, we said, then preferably use paper tissue disposables. If you don't have disposables, then you can use also a towel. We don't consider that as cleaning. And we said that it removed the actual stain without water. With water prohibited. Without water, peeling off what's on top is definitely fine. The actual stain itself, one should preferably use a laundry to scrape it off with his nail. But again, it's important to reiterate, no water. It's forbidden to use water or to ask a laundry to use water. Dust, we said, one may shake dust off. And finally, the rabbinic prohibition, spreading things out so people won't suspect you of having washed it over the course of Shabbat. Any questions? Or melaben, we'll move on.
If you hang something up, are you limited to one peg? Otherwise, you're like spreading it out if you put two pegs
in. Well, it's not so much a number of pegs. It's if it's spreading out, then it's a problem. Yeah. If you're just putting on the one peg, you're probably, if you're using two pegs, you're spreading it out. So that'll be a problem. If you're using the one peg and it just falls down, there's no problem with that. That's not called spreading out. How many forbade the spreading? Okay?
You have to use a peg?
No, you have to use a peg.
You have to use a peg?
What else do you want to use? How will it hang off?
Is it coat
hanger? No, you don't have to, it's just for practical purposes.
Yeah.
A coat hanger, yeah.
Does that not spread it out?
Again, that's the second point. So that's the normal way of doing it. You're hanging up in a normal place. Yeah? That's permissible as well.
You can spread it out on the back of a chair, leave it out of radiators as well.
So that's two issues there. Okay, the first issue is spreading it out over the. Would you just putting it on the back of the chair?
So
again, it will depend on what type. If it's a jacket, that'll be fine. That's a normal way of where you put your jacket. If you're spreading out a dress over the jacket, it's not what you do, right? And then the second issue is the more surreal, which I didn't plan on going into tonight, but I'll mention it very briefly. To put something wet next to a source of fire is prohibited by the Torah. Yeah. This is it's a very important point, and because you've raised it, I'll mention it quickly. You see this sometimes, unfortunately. People have a hot towel rail. And they leave towels in there, which is fine. If it's a dry towel, nothing wrong with leaving it there. Then people do need to have to die, and they wash their hands and dry their hands there. Problem is that there's two problems with the water which gets in that towel. Number one, it's bishul, cooking the water. Number two is melaben. Bleaching, okay? So bleaching, when you have water in it and intense heat, dries it up, that's forbidden. It's forbidden to put something wet on a hot radiator over the course of Shabbat. And therefore, hot towel rails, you may leave a dry towel there, so when you want to use it, it's nice and warm, but you cannot use that in conjunction with water. You cannot be drying your hands on it And therefore, what you just said now, putting it on next to the radiator, hanging on, putting on the radiator, leaving aside your rabbinic prohibition, which we discussed, the biblical prohibition of bishul and milabe.
So that included a wet dish towel, put it on top of the urn to dry out.
100%. 100% forbidden. By the Torah. That's an important point. Okay, two more questions, move on.
Yeah, I mean, so what if your socks get wet? You step into a puddle.
Leave them. You can't spread them out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
No, nothing to be done. Just keep them on. Borrow some new socks.
I dropped my hat in the dust.
Yeah.
I dropped it.
No, so you could go on it. It's not called winnowing. No. Winnowing is when sandwich grows from the ground.
Yeah.
Grows from the ground. Gidolei ka'ar. Things grow from the ground, like seeds and stuff. Okay, good. Let's move on now to knotting and unknotting, tying and untying. So, another one of the third time melachot. And this is a melacha which, again, there's quite a few misconceptions with this melacha. In the Mishkan, we said already that they would have one of the roots to dye it with a certain type of color called techelet. Techelet is bluish greenish type of dye which came from the special fish called the chilazon fish. Okay, whether we have a chilazon today or not is debatable. You'll see some people who wear tzitzit with blue threads. They are of the opinion that we've found this type of fish. Okay, it's a different discussion whether we have this fish today or not. But in any case, this fish you have to trap. And we'll talk about trapping later. This fish you also have to catch it. And you catch it with a fishing net. And to make that net, you have to tie the cords to each other. So that was the knotting in the Mishkan. The other knotting in the Mishkan was when they were spinning, the balls of thread, the one ball finished to knot it up to the next ball of thread. That's the other form of kosher, of knotting, which was in the Mishkan. So knotting and tying is forbidden on Shabbat. The question is, what does knotting mean? What does tying mean? And how do I do my shoelaces? How can you take out a dustbin on Shabbat? All these types of questions. How can a scarf, how can you tie a scarf, a woman tie a scarf on her head, etc. All these types of questions we need to go into. But in order to understand this clearly, we have to set the basic fundamentals here. And also, it's important to understand the basics here, because there are two very different opinions, and based on the reading in the Gemara. So let me explain to you from the beginning. What's clear and is unanimous is that for a knot to be forbidden from the Torah's perspective, it's a knot which is kayama, it's everlasting, permanent. Okay? That's clear, there's no dispute about that. To be forbidden from the Torah, the knot has to be you tying the knot with intention for it to stay there. The debate becomes whether the knot also has to be a knot which is a craftsman knot, a professional knot or not. So, one reading of the Gemara is to say, the reason why the Mishnah, the Talmud, chose to talk about very specific craftsman knots, such as the knots of sailors, the knots of camels that are used with camels, is because those are typically, they are used as kayama, they are used for permanence. But it doesn't have to be a craftsman knot. That's one opinion. One opinion says, as long as it's everlasting, it's forbidden by the Torah, even if it's not a craftsman knot. The other reading of the Talmud is that, no, the Talmud specifically chose these types of knots, the sailor's knot, etc., because apart from it being permanent, the knot, it also has to be a professional knot. Only you have two conditions together, it's forbidden by the Torah. So you have two opinions here. The Rif and the Rambam, two very important authorities in the medieval, they understood the Talmud as saying, you need both conditions to be forbidden by the Torah. Only when you have both, it's forbidden by the Torah. If, however, you only got one of the two, it's not forbidden by the Torah. Other opinion of Rashi, the Rosh and others, they took on that as long as it's permanent, even if it's not professional or not, it's forbidden by the Torah. Now, let's take this a stage down to Rabbinic now. Chamim were gozer, they made a decree on this. Now, what the decree was will depend on what you hold the biblical knot was. So if the biblical knot was, as first opinion is that you need two conditions to be forbidden by the Torah, both permanent and professional, then if you have one of the two alone, it's forbidden by the rabbis. One of the two. According to opinion number one, you need, it's not so complicated this, I'm making it really simple, okay? Just get this clear and the rest will be easy. According to the first opinion, you need two conditions to be forbidden by the Torah, both professional and permanent. But you don't have both, you only got one, i.e., it's a permanent knot, which is not professional. Or it's a professional craftsman knot, which is not permanent, it's made for 10 hours or half an hour. They're forbidden rabbinically, because it has a similarity to the biblical knot. Okay? Is that clear? According to the second opinion, that as long, it doesn't matter professional or not professional, the main point is that it's permanent or not permanent, then as long as it's for a period of time, even if it's not permanent, it's forbidden from a rabbinic perspective. Okay? Now, the difference will be, am I allowed to tie a non-professional knot, an ordinary knot, am I allowed to knot that for, let's say, 2 weeks, or a week, let's say? Can I tie it for a week, a non-professional knot? So, according to the first opinion, seemingly you wouldn't be allowed to. Why? Because remember, by the Torah it's only prohibited when it's both a permanent knot and a professional knot. It's forbidden by the rabbis if you have one of the two, either professional or permanent. If you have a non-professional knot, and it's also not permanent, it's permissible. Right? But, I see I've lost people here.
I don't understand why you'd be tying up a professional knot on Shabbat. I mean, you tie up your lace and your...
That's not professional knot, no.
Professional, no, that's not professional, but I said, just kind of, I don't...
Okay, a craftsman knot, think of a very... technical craftsman knot, or perhaps even a double knot. We'll talk about double knots in a moment. Yeah, something which is.
What would you be tying?
What would you be tying? A double knot. Shoes. Okay, so I can see the. Okay, let's try. I'm going to leave this aside. I think it's a bit technical and complicated. This, but the main point to take away from this, what I've said, is that for us Sfaradim, only a knot which is made for a week or more is forbidden to be done. If it's a knot which is a professional craftsman knot, a very technical knot, yeah, which we'll talk about in a moment, if it's a very technical professional knot, that's forbidden even for 1 hour. But if it's an ordinary knot, a single knot, an ordinary knot, as long as it's done for less than a week, that's permissible to be done. Ashkenazim hold differently, they follow the second opinion, therefore it comes after them even 24 hours to be done. Ashkenazim, you have to be able to tie the knot and untie it within 24 hours. Okay. But we hold, like the first opinion, the Rif and the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch follows, is that as long as it's within 7 days, one intends to untie it within 7 days, one is allowed to make such a knot, providing it's not a professional knot. Now, that's what comes out, and that's what we need to take away with us. That means, when you're tying your shoes on Shabbat, so you can tie your shoe and intend to only untie it a couple of days later. So you're traveling, or you're going to sleep with your shoes that night, or, you know, Shavuot night, and why not? Shavuot night, you've been up all night, and it's after Shabbat, you're tying it on Shabbat morning, and you're not going to go into sleep, or you tied it on Friday night, or let's say Shabbat morning, you're not going to be going to sleep till more than 24 hours. Because you're staying up the whole, let's say Shabbat, Shabbat night, staying all the way through till 10, 11 in the morning, etc. So it'll be more than 24 hours, that's fine. As long as you intend to untie it within 7 days. However, what can sometimes be an issue, sometimes people buy shoes and they just tie, the first time they buy it, and then they do the knot, and then it just after they just slip it on and off. So doing that on the, that's it's quite common. So people who do that, they must make sure never to tie that first knot on Shabbat, because that knot they intend to keep for a period of time. And although it may not be permanent, it may not be forbidden by the Torah, or it's for a period of time longer than a week, or be forbidden by the Chachamim, forbidden on the rabbinic prohibition. And therefore, when a person ties his shoes on Shabbat, as long as he doesn't, you know, normally, we presume people are going to untie their shoes after Shabbat, or the next, within 24 hours, within a week, unless the person positively thinks to himself, you know, I'm tying off my shoes now, and I'm not going to be taking off for a good few weeks now, then you shouldn't do that on Shabbat. Otherwise, one may tie a knot off his shoes on Shabbat. Now, are you allowed to make a double knot on Shabbat? So we've said you need to do seven days. Okay? So why would you not be allowed to do a double knot? We've said that a knot you're allowed to do for 7 days. Because some look at a double knot and they consider a double knot as being a professional craftsman knot. And that is the opinion of the Ramah and Ashkenazim. And therefore, they won't do a double knot even if they intend to untie it within an hour. However, the Chida, Rabbi Yosef Chaim David Azulai, was a great Sephardi halachic authority from about 250-300 years ago, from Italy. He writes very clearly that the custom in all of the countries he traveled the world. He wrote a whole biography about his life, all the places he traveled to. And he wrote clearly all the places, the Sephardi countries he went to, the minhag is to consider, the custom is to consider a double knot as not a professional knot. Professional knot are the ones mentioned in the Mishnah. A sailor's knot, a camel's knot, these very technical ones which were made for a long time, and things like that. But a double knot is not considered a craftsman knot. And therefore, a double knot may be tied for 7 days with the intent to untie it within 7 days. That may be done on Shabbat. So, again, coming back to our shoes again, one may do tie up his shoes, even with a double knot, not just a single knot, even with a double knot, one may tie up his shoes with a double knot, as long as one intends to untie it within 7 days, within 1 week. Similarly, you know, although most Sfaradim here in the area, at least, our Sifrei Torah have the cases, right? But some Sfaradim have Sifrei Torah, which they have at the time, like Ashkenazim do. They tie the bands around, right? And so, using a double knot there on the Sefer Torah would be fine, because it's double knot, as we're saying, isn't constant. That's how the custom in the Spanish Portuguese community is, that we use a double knot, because you're going to be untying it within a week, the next Shabbat. Alright? And therefore, 7 days, and even a double knot is considered, it's not considered a professional craft or not that permissible. The question is, the major debate is the Sefer Torah for Yom Tov. Because there, when you tie it up after you've read it, may not be used for another year again, another 6 months. Okay? Nonetheless, I'm not going to go into this, it's a whole complex issue. The final halakha is, even in this case, one may tie a double knot on the Sefer Torah. Unique to this case, I'm not going to go into the details why, quite a complex rationale, but unique to this case, that's just in brackets, you should know. But generally speaking, a double knot is the same state as a single knot, and may be done for 1 week maximum, but not more than that.
The tie is the same.
No. I'll come to that now. Now, what we've talked about until now is a knot. A bow, however, is different. A bow isn't considered a knot in the slightest. The difference being is, a knot is something which you have to manipulate in order to untie. A bow, all you have to do is just slip it out. Yeah? A ribbon, something like that. And a tie, a shoelace is a single knot with a bow. A single knot, and then the bow. Right, a bow by itself isn't a knot at all, and a bow by itself may be tied even for a long time, which is why when you do your tie, even if you intend to keep, some people as well, same thing, they can make a tie once and then keep it for a good few weeks, just take it on and off their head each time without undoing it. That would be possible to do on Shabbat, because a tie, again, is a bow. A bow in Hebrew is called an aniva, and a tie in Hebrew is called an aniva. The knot is a bow, you just slip it out. Therefore, such a bow, it's permissible to be made on Shabbat without any issue at all. Now,
Now, the other point to be aware about is that things which are typically tied for a long time, things are typically tied for a long time for permanence, it doesn't help you to tie them and intend to untie it within 7 days. So for example, the two examples given in the halakha, number one is tzitzit. So let's say your tzitzit have unraveled, and to tie your tzitzit, that's a knot, right? And it's a permanent knot. You tie the tzitzit, you tie for permanence. So let's say I'm stuck, and I have to say, I want to do the mitzvah of tzitzit. So I think to myself, look, let me tie the knot, and I'll intend to untie it after Shabbat, and then re-tie it again. So it's a temporary knot. It doesn't help. You can't do that. Any knot, by its nature, the common use of the knot is to use that knot for permanence. It doesn't help for you to think that you don't want to do it for permanence. Another, the second example given is an eruv. If unfortunately this can happen, the knot of the eruv falls on Shabbat, you need to tie it back again. So you can't. The rabbi can't go and tie it on Shabbat. This is a permanent knot. If you want an eruv. True, sometimes it may not end up permanent, may fall by itself. But when you tie the knot, you tie it for permanence. That's a normal way of doing it. It doesn't help for the rabbi to go and tie the knot and then to think to himself, look, I'm going to come after Shabbat and untie it. We can say, we can untie it. Because this type of knot is a knot which is done for permanence. In this very unique case, when there's a lab class conundrum, I'm going to tie the knot of the ear, even if it's asking to do it right, I'm going to leave it to one. But one may ask. So that's important to bear in mind. And finally, this is an important point, is that permanence doesn't have to mean that you're getting a benefit from the permanence. So let's say you have a dustbin bag. I want to tie up a dustbin bag and take it out of the house. So can I tie a double knot? So for me, I'm tying the double knot because I just want to get it out of the house. I don't want to spill it and taking it out of the house. I've got no interest in this staying the double knot. As soon as it gets to my bin outside, I don't care what happens to it. Right? Nonetheless, one shouldn't tie a knot on Shabbat in the dustbin bag, because that knot will be permanent knot. That knot will end up being a permanent knot. Although you're not getting any benefit from it, but that knot will end up being a permanent one, because it's not going to become untied. And therefore, you do doing up the dustbin bag on Shabbat, what you do is do a single knot, as in just very, very basic, you know. And that's not even considered a knot at all. A single knot with a bow, the bow strengthens the single knot, therefore that's only permissible for a period of time. A single knot of its own, but nothing, that's got no permanence at all, and therefore that's permissible to be done, even if it's going to stay on. It's not going to stay forever because it's so transient, you know, it's going around, it'll come loose. But that's not the correct way of doing a dustbin bag or tying a dustbin bag on Shabbat, which is a single knot, as in, it's two types of single knots, by the way. Don't confuse a single knot with an overhand knot, yeah? Don't confuse a single knot with an overhand knot. So if you have a thread, and you tie within the thread, yeah? This is an overhand knot. This has got the same status as a double knot, right? This is a single knot, but it's an overhand knot. And because it's not binding to anything, it becomes, within itself, it becomes locked. This is a single knot, but it has got the same status as a single knot of the shoes. Because there, it's got the bones. Yeah, single knot which you begin your shoelaces with, or single knot we just talked about, a dustbin, that can be done, and it can be left for a long time. Because that's got no, you're allowed to do that even though you don't intend to undo it within 7 days or 24 hours. Because it's got no permanence to it. A knot like this, it's a proper knot, it's got the status of a double knot, an overhand knot, and therefore that would only be permissible within to untie it within 7 days. Not to be done all that. To summarize what we talked about kosher, then we'll take questions. We've said the kosher on 39 melachot, knotting, and I'll say one more point about it, it's an important point. Anything where to be able to do the knot, to be able to tie. Untie, I mean. Okay? Whenever to be able to make the knot, if the knot has already been made, then to be able to untie. So you are allowed to untie a knot on Shabbat, which is not a professional knot, a craftsman knot, which isn't really practical. We don't really have craftsman knots today, yeah? And it wasn't a permanent knot. One may untie a knot which wasn't made to be more than 7 days. One may not untie a knot which is not meant to be more than 7 days. So to summarize, what we've said is that, according to us, One may tie any knot on Shabbat as long as it's not a technical craftsman knot, or may tie a knot on Shabbat as long as he intends to untie it within 7 days. And we said that a double knot is similarly permissible. Double knot is considered, we don't take it on as being a permanent, as being a craftsman knot. And therefore, as long as one intends to untie it within 7 days, one may make a double knot. Similarly, a woman with her scarf, she doesn't feel comfortable wearing one knot, so make a double knot, that's fine to do on Shabbat. As long as she intends to untie it within 7 days, that's fine. We talked about Sefer Torah as well. One may use a double knot on a Sefer Torah. And we said even Yom Tov Sefer Torah may do so. A bow, we said, isn't a knot at all, and a bow may be done even for permanence. That's why you can make a tie. And we also explained that an overhand knot is the status of a double knot. And finally, if one is two further points is that one can't tie a knot which is normally permanent and have the intent of untying it within a week. It's not going to help because it's normally done for permanence. And finally, is that even though one doesn't not going to get benefit from the one's not going to get benefit from the permanence, for example, a dustbin bag, from tying it for permanently, nonetheless, one may not tie it with a double knot, because that will last and that will stay. And therefore one should make sure to use a very simple single knot, and that's it. Any questions on knotting or unknotting?
Can you tighten the knot? Not this tight, it's knotted, but it's a bit loose.
No,
the sits the
no absolutely not. It's a good point. You can't do that. That's people do that unfortunately on Shabbat. Yeah, with the tzitzit you can't knot the tzitzit on Shabbat.
Not knotting, just tighten what a knot.
That's making the knot. That's making the knot. You can't do that on Shabbat. And that's a typically permanent knot, therefore that may even be forbidden by the Torah. So one shouldn't do it on Shabbat. One shouldn't be doing not tzitzit on Shabbat at all.
One dustbin.
Yeah.
Okay,
so talk about them again tomorrow. Are we talking about carrying or what?
I just don't even touch my husband, just to say I didn't
even. Okay, good point. We'll talk about them again. The Mukta lecture, it's a big. In certain circumstances, you can. We're talking about ways you can, yeah? There's two potential issues, carrying and also Mukta. But when we get to the Mukta lecture, I think it's the penultimate. I think it's the. Which one is it? Is it the penultimate one? We'll talk about it today. Good, so that is kosher. Any further questions for kosher?
Can I ask for a dustbin? Can you tie like two ends and then do the opposite two ends? Like do it one way and then do another single knot with different ends. Imagine how it's four corners.
Yeah.
You do a single knot with those two corners and then a single knot with those two corners over it.
Not fully clear. Do you understand what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then each single knot of its own accord has got no status. A single knot has got no a single knot like that, not a single overhand knot. A single knot is not a knot at all. When you have it added onto it like a bow or something like it, that would be fine for it. Yeah. Okay, we run out of time to do side trapping before we introduce over side. Wait 1 second. So just we had, where's the booklets? You know what the booklet? So we had to do today a couple more melachot, trapping and also slaughtering and also
shochet.
Yeah, shochet and another one, tofer as well.
So,
and tearing as well. So we're basically a full lecture behind. We have the last one, we have an extra one, so what we'll probably do is next week we'll do what we're meant to do today, and we'll just not next week. The next lecture is in 2 weeks, correct? Yeah. The next year is on the 5th of February, so not next week. Next week we have a break. The following one will be on the 5th, and in that year we will talk about hunting, not just going out and hunting, but also pets at home, birds flying in, mouse traps on Shabbat, all that type of stuff. And also, we'll also talk about trapping humans. Can you put a baby in its cot? That's a type of, we'll talk about all of that next time. Or somebody who's running away from authorities can take them back to prison in Israel, for example. These types of things we'll talk about next week, next time. Shochet as well. Talk about flies in the house, etc., trapping them, killing them, washing out vegetables on Shabbat, which are infested, fly spray, all these types of things. And also, we will talk about tearing envelopes, and all these types of things that will be next one. And that will be, please God, on the 5th of February.